My name is Nathaniel Parkin, and I'm about to interview my mom.
My name is Linda Parkin, and I'm about to talk to my son. It's the 100th year of Messiah College.
It sure is.
And I was here for 25 of them. And you were here for?
Just about 25 of them as well, growing up less than a mile away.
That's right.
And having both my parents actually work at Messiah College.
That's right.
I feel like I grew up on campus, which was an amazing childhood.
And used to drink the Gatorade that was left for the cross-country
team.
We did. Out in the...
They'd have marathons. They'd be running through, and we'd quickly run ahead of them and drink all the lemonade and Gatorade, and then they'd get there. They didn't have anything. Well, I always wanted to know, Mom, why did you come to Messiah? How did you and Dad decide? Because it's interesting, growing up as a kid, both my parents worked at the same place, and they worked there for 25 years.
That's
I think that's somewhat unheard of.
As you know, Dad is the distinguished alum this year for their 100th year. He actually went to school here. So probably that influenced it a great deal, that he went to school here and finished his PhD and got a job and came here. And I never thought I would be a college professor.
No?
Absolutely never. I was a
That's funny, because I couldn't pick you as anything else.
I was a bilingual teacher in Boston, and I loved it. I worked with immigrants,
yeah.
And I taught Spanish, and I learned Spanish because of the immigrants that I was with.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd be one for my whole life. But instead, we moved to Chicago because Dad became the president of North Park University. Dad's name, David.
David Parkin.
David became the president of North Park. So I have a new role now in Chicago a little
You're
bit.
The first lady, huh?
I'm the first lady. And I decided that I was too old to be different than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I still teach Spanish.
It's good.
And I love the people and I love welcoming them, but I'm still myself. I worked at Dickinson at first in Carlisle. And then started slowly to teach at Messiah College. And instead of teaching immigrants, I taught about immigrants and got Messiah students to care about immigrants throughout the world.
And you've been everywhere. You and Dad have been everywhere.
Yeah. Messiah's been really good to us. We've been able to see a lot of the Spanish-speaking world and take students there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And probably one of the best things that I remember is just all the students that had only been in central Pennsylvania, had only been in a small town, and yet here at Messiah, they experienced the world, they studied abroad.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, and those kinds of things change people's lives.
Sure. Do you miss Messiah?
I do.
Honestly, yeah.
Honestly.
What do you miss, Mom?
I miss the people. Yeah. I miss the people of Messiah College. I don't think you can ever take away the people who you grew up with. The people that I worked with at Messiah, about maybe 10 to 12 people have been here since the beginning of their families and the beginning of our family.
Yeah, and I grew up with their kids.
And you grew up with their kids.
Which
and
is great.
Those 6 or 7 couples of people who you all grew up together, we did all kinds of things together. We're still friends, even though the kids are all over and we're gone now. Messiah College gave us a place to raise our kids together, to have friends. Well, when I was a young teacher, I can remember that I would enter into the Spanish 1 classroom, and as you know, I do make it come alive a bit.
Sure, absolutely.
And as I would teach, you see students just determine that they'll never speak a second language.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the semester, you're no longer ever speaking in English to them, and they're no longer ever speaking to you. So the cycle of how you start a second language, and how my favorite class is the class where I've always created a fictional country, and that country is called Bartonia.
Bartonia.
And in Bartonia, the students have to create a government and find places to live and get food, and it's like Gilligan's Island for Spanish 4. And that's probably my favorite class, when the students actually take over. And every single year on the first day of class, I run into class and I'm screaming and yelling that the boat has sunk and we'll never get to Tahiti. And I'm only the guide. And what's happened to all of you? And you'd better figure it out, because we have nothing to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be back here in the next couple of minutes, and you better know who you are. And on each desk, every student has who they are, the persona of who they are. So Bill Gates is always on our ship. And people like
And they have to be him in Spanish.
Yeah, the NF Spanish athlete and all these people. And then there will be like a mother who has two children and two of the other people in the class are her children. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know who they are. And her husband died when the boat sunk. Mm-hmm. And that's my favorite class when I just make it come along and they forget. They absolutely forget that they're speaking a second language.
How did you get... One of my things growing up, when you left for the Fulbright scholarship and, and when you got that award and you decided to do that, how did that all come about?
I took a risk.
Yeah.
I took a risk and I was 47 years old.
Which you're not scared of doing.
Well, I think I was then.
You picked up and moved to Chicago too.
This is true. But at 47, I applied for a Fulbright and I said, if I get this Fulbright Scholar Award, I will go to another country and live by myself and leave my two kids in college and my husband. And I'll have to find a place to live and I'll teach Mexican students instead of students here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so I took a risk and applied and said what I'd do and they bought it.
Wow.
So I learned a tremendous amount being a Fulbrighter. But probably the best thing I ever learned was that my students could be Fulbrighters too.
So you have a couple students that became Fulbright?
Yes. Oh, yes. Wow. Here at Messiah. And several students then went and became grantees right when they finished. My most favorite student became a Fulbright grantee to Turkey.
Wait. I thought I was your most favorite student.
Well, I didn't have you in class like I had everybody else in class.
No, we did go to class once.
Once we went to class when we went to Guatemala. Yep. That's right. During a J term.
So your second most favorite
student. And all your friends in my class. That maybe wasn't such a good thing.
It might have been the only A we all got together, that's for sure. So go back to your students. They became Fulbright scholars?
I didn't know that. U.S. student grantees for a whole year after they finished. And I've had several students do this. And it opens up the world. The student that I'm talking about went to Turkey for a year.
Wow.
And then she now is in a master's program at Georgetown in Latin American Studies after Turkey.
Wow. So you spent your time in Mexico?
Yes. In Aguascalientes, Mexico.
How was that?
It was mind-changing once again because you get to see how the rest of the world views our country. And I was there 2001, 2002, right after 9/11.
Yes, I remember.
And Mexican people were incredibly kind about the United States, but also incredibly angry sometimes at who our country can be. So I learned a lot through that, which comes cycles back once again through the classroom. I've been teaching Mexican history and culture for years.
How was watching or hearing about 9/11 in a foreign country? That must have been interesting.
Well, actually, it was kind of funny. Yeah. I was teaching class and they came in and stopped class and they said, come with us. And they told me that it had happened. And I said, oh, I'm sure you're wrong.
Yeah.
And they said, no, it happened. So I went and there were about 400 people in a very small cafeteria and one TV. And this was the most interesting part to me. When I went in to see what had happened on the TV, the room was, everyone was talking at once, and the TV was turned up really loudly. And when I walked in as the American, there were no other Americans there, the room went dead quiet.
Wow.
You could hear a pin drop. They moved out of the way.
Wow.
They made a pathway. And I didn't even know what happened.
Yeah.
And I walked up to the front in front of the TV. And Mexican reporters are not like our sanitized reporters, you know, they were yelling and screaming and saying, something has happened in the United States. And I was like, and they were saying, what has happened to me in Spanish? And I was like, I think you people can understand that guy a lot better than I can at the moment as to what. And actually, I stood there and watched the second tower come down on the TV. But everyone came up to me in that cafeteria, shook my hand, said they were sorry. It was like I was at a wake.
Yeah.
And those people immediately treated me like, you know, to take care of me in a way that I kept trying to say, nothing happened, you know, to me.
Sure.
But it was that incredible sense when I was there that they cared about what happened to me.
Give your son some advice, Mom.
Well, I think you really do love what you do, and you followed what you do, and that's important. Every day you want to get up to go to work in the morning. And I can actually say that in my about 30 some years of teaching now, I have never gotten up in the morning and said, I don't want to do this. I absolutely love it. It's down in my core.
This podcast was produced by Craig Heiss for Listen Up, with interviews recorded by StoryCorps, a national initiative to record and collect stories of everyday Americans.